Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Cast to the Past, the time-traveling podcast where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. My name's Josh.
And I'm Liquidus Tom. And Josh, what are we discussing today on this 4th of July?
Well, see, this is really weird to me, Tom, because I thought we were going to release this on April 30th. Don't you remember what happened on April 30th?
John, that's the day we met. We met right here on this podcast.
That was it. That was it.
Yep. But tell everybody about this game that we played
today,
on the day we met.
We are going to be talking about the sequel to one of the biggest PlayStation 1 games of all time, Metal Gear Solid 2.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that this is a sequel to one of the biggest PlayStation 1 games ever, and, you know, arguably this is one of the most important PlayStation 2 games ever for lots of reasons that we're going to dive into today. But it came with its share of controversy when it came out. Controversy that, I'll just say up front, I think was completely uncalled for, and in retrospect, pretty embarrassing. I think most, if not all, the things that people complained about this game, in retrospect, it's like, ooh, it's like, for me, it's like being the caveman who, like, scoffed at the wheel. It's like, oh, that's stupid. Oh, that will never catch on. Oh.
So I do want to talk about, we're probably going to dive into that, the conversation about the controversies behind this game, because there is something that happened within the past couple of years that is very similar to what happened with this game too. So I'm very excited to dive into it. So why did we pick the 4th of July to release this episode?
Metal Gear Solid 2, beyond the kind of, you know, obvious patriotic trappings it has, it's about America's greatest secret agent going on a mission to save New York City and the rest of the world from nuclear annihilation. You know, it's got all the trappings of a Hollywood summer blockbuster, but this game actually gets at a lot of deep, unspoken, honestly, truths about American culture, the American population, and for a game released months after 9/11, one of the worst, if not the worst, tragedies in American history, this game almost saw the entire post 9/11 future that we would be living in. And we're going to get into it all today.
Ooh.
Ooh. So Josh, what's your history with this game? When did you first pick up Metal Gear Solid 2?
So I picked this up. I did play it originally on the PlayStation 2. I was a late bloomer when it came to the PlayStation 2. I got the PlayStation 2. I got one of the big fat boys back when the Slims came out. So it was probably...
It was really?
Yeah.
That was like 05.
Yeah,
wow.
I was a late bloomer when it came to the PlayStation 2 because I was an Xbox person and a GameCube person for the longest time.
I thought you were kind of all three. I thought the GameCube was the odd one out of the three.
No, the GameCube, the GameCube I got right at launch. Well, I got that for Christmas. Okay. But the Xbox I got like a couple days after launch day as well. But the PlayStation was the one that I just... There wasn't anything I ever wanted to play on it. And if there was, I always went over to a friend's house and played Devil May Cry or SOCOM Navy SEALs or Vice City or no, GTA 3 and so on, right? And it was a couple of years down the road that I played this. And it was probably around 2004, 2005. And I didn't really like it.
Oh, no.
I didn't. Okay. I didn't really like it at the time. And it just didn't get me the way that the first one did. Because I went in on a high of Metal Gear Solid 1. I played Metal Gear Solid 1 so many times. Yeah, I could probably beat that game in, 2 hours, maybe. I should try it one time.
You have said that on this podcast before, because frequent listeners will know that one of our earliest episodes was you and I talking about Metal Gear Solid The Twin Snakes, which is the GameCube remake of the first game. So we talked about the GameCube game, but we gave both versions their day in court in the episode, honestly. And you, if not in that episode, I know on streams or other episodes, you have famously in my brain always said that Metal Gear Solid 1 on the PlayStation is the best Metal Gear game, which you know, shook me. But, you know, we'll get into it. We'll get into it. Maybe we'll find out why or why not as this episode goes along. But just to give some background, so I managed to get a PlayStation 2, I want to say in very early 2003. And the way I kind of negotiated this purchase to my family was, okay, look, my grades have been on the up, and I haven't asked for anything in a while. So, if you get me this, not only will I keep doing good in school, but I will stop hogging the living room DVD player. Because, you know, like, that was at the dawn of DVD players, and that's, you know, we had just the one in the house. And they would be like, Todd, stop watching movies, go do something else. And I was like, if you get me a PlayStation 2, you'll never see me in the living room again. So they did. And when they asked what game I wanted, I was looking at the shelves of GameStop, or sorry, EB Games.
EB Games, electronic boutique.
Mm-hmm. And I saw this, and it immediately clicked in my brain, because as a child, I had a blast watching my cousins play Metal Gear Solid 1 on the PlayStation 1. I thought that was one of the coolest, like, backseat gaming experiences I had ever had. So I was like, the sequel to that game? Hell yeah, I'll get it. It's got to be just as great.
Yep.
And so I got it, and I put tons of hours into Sons of Liberty, because that was my only PlayStation 2 game at the time. I'm a big fan. We're just going to spoil that up front. Big fan. But we'll get into it. Maybe, you know, over the course of this episode, opinions may be swayed one way or another. But first and foremost, Josh, do you want to do the nitty gritty?
You know, I can do the nitty gritty. I think I should, since this is going to be a Tom focused episode, I feel like, you know, normally you would go do the nitty gritty for a Josh focused episode. I feel like I can come in here and let me see what I can do. Ladies and gentlemen, Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty was released on November 13th, 2001 by Konami Computer Entertainment Japan. The director was Hideo Kojima. The producer was Hideo Kojima. The designer was Hideo Kojima. The writer was Hideo Kojima. I feel like this was a Hideo Kojima game.
Are they all related? Are they just a series of uncles and sons and fathers?
Actually, they are. Guy. Yeah, it's all different people.
All different people?
Yeah, all different people.
Oh. So are they just a group of friends? They all wandered into the room and they're like, oh my God, we're all named Hideo Kojima.
How crazy is that, right?
It's ridiculous.
So...
never.
The Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty was released on the PlayStation 2, Xbox, Windows, and I believe, the Vita.
You got it right there in your hand, yeah. 2001. The PlayStation 2, it's been out for a little over a year at this point, a year and change. This is not just the successor to one of the most popular consoles of all time, but this is a console whose very existence made waves. You know, DVD player built in, the promise of online play, the big boost in graphics from like the polygonal days to the more refined, polished look. You know, when you first heard of a PS2, what was your reaction? Like, do you remember ever seeing a PlayStation 2 for the first
time? Yeah, this thing is not going to outdo the Sega Dreamcast.
Is that really what you thought?
Yeah. I loved the Sega. Okay. I had a Sega Dreamcast, and I absolutely loved it. And there was no way, no console was ever going to beat it.
Do you want to hear the games that came out on this thing in 2001 prior to Metal Gear Solid 2?
Yeah.
We had Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, Grand Theft Auto 3, Gran Turismo 3, Devil May Cry.
3?
No, just the first
one. Okay.
Twisted Metal Black, Ico, Silent Hill 2, NBA Street, Onimusha Warlords, Spy Hunter, Resident Evil Co-Veronica X. I mean, you want to talk about a great first year for a console.
Yeah.
Holy crap, did PlayStation 2 have one.
Yeah.
Hit after hit after it was, generation.
I would say it's the biggest first party year or first year of a release of a console, and it was probably it held that record all the way up until the Switch came out. The year of the Switch, and
the Switch did it with much fewer games. That's the crazier thing, you know. Like, but still, it has to be acknowledged. It's super impressive, especially when you got like a month before this, Grand Theft Auto 3. You know, the game that seemed like it changed everything. It's like, holy crap, nothing will top this. So, Metal Gear Solid 2. It was revealed at E3 2000, and the kind of trailer, the reveal trailer for this game it brought the house down. It was instantly kind of identified as the killer app for the PlayStation 2, not just because of the power of the console on display, but also the potential of like blockbuster movie storytelling. We're all right now used to pretty epic video game narratives, you know, huge journeys, emotional stakes. But back then, we were still kind of growing. And when everyone saw this, we were like, this is it. This is the future, you know?
Yeah.
So, huge amounts of hype for this game. Now, this all comes back, obviously, to one dude, Hideo Kojima. And when he was shown the PS2 hardware, it's quoted that he knew he wanted to push it to its limits. And he wanted to take the possibilities of Metal Gear into incredible new directions. He wanted squad-based enemy AI. He wanted interactive environments. He wanted dynamic lighting that not only made the game look good, but would play into the gameplay. And the thing is, all of those things are on display in just the opening level of this game alone. Mm-hmm. And how they go on from there is just incredible. His original design document for the game states that his aim was to introduce a series of betrayals and sudden reversals to the point where the player is unable to tell fact from fiction, blurring the lines between what is real and what is fantasy, and ironies aimed at global digital society and gaming culture. Now that may sound like an up your ass mouthful, but
it is really the last half an hour of this game.
Yes, yes, like would you disagree with me that, like, everything that I just said he wanted to do, he pulled off?
Oh, he pulled it off. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. The big thing that we talk about here, though, right? You know, you said that, you know, he was pushing the PlayStation 2 to the limits. And the system just came out not too long ago. So, like, it's really hard to push something to its limits so early on. But it is one of the better looking PlayStation 2 games. I mean, you look at God of War 1 and 2, those were probably the games that pushed the PlayStation 2 to its limits. But you can see where these games came from because of Metal Gear Solid 2. But you talk about Metal Gear Solid 2 as being a blockbuster for gaming. And that is where one of my first critiques come into play. Is this a video game or is it a movie?
I would argue it's both, and I don't have a problem with it being either. But are you saying you think the ratio is skewed?
How much time in cutscenes do you think are in this game?
Do you have the exact
figure? I got the exact number.
Tell me.
I want you to guess.
All right. I would imagine there is probably about 6 hours of cutscene.
Okay. Okay. Close. 5 hours and 24 minutes worth of cutscenes.
Okay. All right. And do you have any data on how long it actually takes to beat this game?
11 hours.
All right. Well, so about 60-40.
Yeah.
But the 60% is still towards gameplay.
Just barely. Just barely. I thought that was crazy. But, like, it is crazy that, you know, there's a part in this game where you walk down a hall, you're in a cutscene, you open up a door, you're in another cutscene, you walk down that hall, you're in another cutscene. Just make it one fluid cutscene then.
I get why, that complaint. Why do you
break,
I understand.
Why do you break that up? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why do I need to interact with this door in order for the cutscene to trigger? Just make it one giant cutscene.
I understand that. It can ruin immersion. It can ruin the flow of things.
Like I said, that was my first gripe. First gripe.
Sure. That's fine. Yeah. If you are trying to sell a story moment, keep us in the cutscene.
Right.
And if you're trying to sell a gameplay moment, keep us in the gameplay.
Correct.
Kojima obviously had a big budget and a lot of liberty because of how good Metal Gear Solid 1 was. And do you want to hear what the plot for Metal Gear Solid 2 almost turned out to be?
Ooh. Is it shorter than any of the cutscenes in this?
I can't tell you that. But I believe as far in as like mid-2000, so almost a year and a half where this game came out, the original plot was going to involve a nuclear weapon crisis in Iraq and Iran, and Snake was going to have to infiltrate those countries to stop it. However, rising political tensions in 1999 and 2000 caused them to pivot away from that. Now, we're going to talk about how this game predicted a lot of post 9/11 stuff after 9/11. But can we talk about how before it even happened, he was already being like, yeah, America's probably going to go and get involved in a nuclear weapon crisis in Iraq. That's very likely to happen. It's like, how does he always know?
Well, he's got the same manatees that the Family Guy team has during that episode of South Park. And the same ones that the Simpsons use to predict the future all the time.
So it's just a combination of time-traveling manatees that write all of his games.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Seriously, I can't get over how just reading that. It's like, oh, a deleted storyline.
He predicted Amazon delivery for Death Stranding.
He predicted a quarantine that would isolate and separate most of America with Death Stranding. Like, this dude.
He predicted us being locked and trapped inside of our house. And being scared of everything that's on the outside.
I can't handle time-traveling Kojima.
Yeah.
But let's get on to the gameplay.
Yes.
So, Josh, tell us about the gameplay of this game.
Well, I mean, you are like you're dodging and you're sneaking and you're doing the thing that everyone complains about in Twin Snakes, which has first-person gunplay. I don't understand why people are so upset. Everyone's so upset that it's in Twin Snakes, but it's in this game, and everyone's completely fine with it.
Well, let's talk about that. So what Josh is referring to is the fact that a good portion of this game plays in the same kind of top-down style as Metal Gear Solid 1, but you have the ability to go into a first-person aiming mode with most of your weapons to target enemies. Now, in the Twin Snakes episode when we talked about this, I basically just share that my problem with it is that the way Metal Gear Solid 1 is designed, you know, like with the way its levels are laid out and things like that, having a first-person view makes that game way too easy because enemies are just that much easier to pick off. I don't think it's a problem in this game because the game's designed to accommodate that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like,
because the levels are more vertical.
I have a problem with it in general.
Okay.
Like it's just like you're going from that top-down third person to first person. Like, why are we getting both modes? Like, just do an over-the-shoulder thing. Like, I feel like if they would have done over-the-shoulder, very similar to, I'm going to say it, Resident Evil 4. Or Silent Hill 2, or any of those type of games. You know what I mean? There was the over-the-shoulder gunplay that they had. Why do you go from looking above your character to right behind their gun?
Well, because at the time, Resident Evil 4 had not come out yet and revolutionized third-person gameplay to the extent that everyone was copying it. You know, there is that. I think this kind of just falls into the same system that, you know, this happens in, you know, the N64 Zelda games, just for off the top of my head. You know, if you hit up C, it cuts into first-person view with Link. Now, granted, Link can't perform actions when he's in first-person view, but, you know, it's there for you, the player, to kind of, like, look around and things like that. So, at the time, I feel like he was trying to step up from that, you know. And, I mean, maybe it hasn't aged too well. I don't know. So, when you're talking about the stealth in this game, this series is very famous for its stealth. What kind of stealth gameplay is within Metal Gear Solid 2, Josh?
So, I mean, it's stealth espionage, right? You're crawling under things, you're hiding, you're, you know, throwing sounds, and you're trying to be as much of a spy, technically, as you can be.
Yeah, the world is so interactive that the kind of things you can do to maintain stealth, it's really dang impressive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sound's a big one, not just in, distracting. Like, well, let's talk about sound and distracting enemies. I just want to expand on this point. So what I really like is shooting, like, cans or other kind of things in the environment that will, like, bounce or rattle and make enemies go like, huh, huh, huh? Like, you know, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is something from the first game, too, but it there was more of an attention to it in this one, where when you're walking on certain grates, like they would like notice the sounds because like it was be two different types of like if you're walking like on like a steel grate, it's so much louder. So like you'd almost have to like walk or like crawl over them to prevent any sound from actually happening, so you don't attract attention to it. That kind of stuff I really liked, because it was like you have to be more aware of your surrounding.
And not just with sound, let's talk about kind of how the visual language of stealth, let's call it that, is a big factor in this game. Sure, the most obvious thing is you're not careful enough, an enemy sees you. But there's so many just things in this world that you can interact with that play into how you can navigate around enemies. You can shoot out video cameras, which returns from the first game. You can also like shoot out ceiling lights, and enemies will be like, what the hell? Like, you know, you shoot out a light and you hide, and then an enemy will be like, huh? And he'll like examine it so you can sneak up on him. That's one I really enjoyed. You can shoot a wall-mounted plasma TV and it'll like melt out the way plasma TVs did before, like, we had LED and LCD. So many of my early memories of this game, honestly, are just screwing around at the tanker level, because at the time I was like, what can't I do? You know, what can't I get away with?
Right. But let's talk about the tanker, right? We see the gameplay. We see all of the stills of this game, and it's all about the boat at the beginning of the game, right? And they show Snake running around and doing all of his snake-like things, walking around just being like, I'm a snack, right?
Slither, yes.
But that is only like the first half an hour of the game, because Snake dies in the first half an hour of the game. So everything that we've ever seen was of just the first half an hour of the game.
Absolutely.
We didn't see anything else.
Now, we're talking about this retroactively, as Josh and I said. We didn't come into this hyped, but a lot of the gaming community at the time were all bored being on Solid Snake's next adventure, and this game starts out very much like that. Snake and his buddy Otacon, they are on a mission. They are boarding an American military tanker, and they are attempting to find information on a brand new model of Metal Gear, the walking tank that can launch a nuke from anywhere on the planet. They know that the military has designed a new one, and they want to leak it on the internet. Can you imagine Kojima, he predicted leaking things on the internet. Imagine if that was the biggest surprise this game had. But right as Snake is fulfilling his mission, and he successfully, you know, gets those, he gets those dirty pictures of Metal Gear Ray, what happens, Josh?
Ocelot shows up and he's like, I'm gonna kill this Russian guy and I'm gonna steal Ray and we're gonna sink this boat.
A lot of dramatic shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Ocelot. I mean it's not as dramatic as how I just interpreted it. Okay, so don't even try to find a cutscene, or don't even try to put the cutscene over, because like that's it.
There will be no clips on this part of the episode. But yeah, no, there's basically Snake finds out that he was participating in what was already a setup, you know? He infiltrated a setup, he got swerved, and Metal Gear Ray gets stolen, the tanker blows up, and then we flash forward.
And it's 2 years. 2 years later. 2 years.
A few years later. And who do we meet, Josh? Where are we? Where does this game take place after?
Is it Big Shell?
Yep.
Big Shell.
The Big Shell.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the Big Shell is?
It's a tanker. It's an oil tanker.
Well, it's an oil cleanup facility that has been built in the Hudson River.
Because of the Ray destroying the boat.
Yes, yes.
See how it comes all together?
It all comes together. So the Big Shell
has been
taken over.
Oh my God. Did Kojima predict the oil spill?
The BP oil spill.
We're 2011. Sorry.
Oh my God.
We're deeply sorry. Yeah. Oh my God.
He just keeps doing it. So 2 years later, this facility called the Big Shell has been constructed in the Hudson River, and it's meant to clean up the oil from the tanker explosion. But when the President of the United States is on a routine inspection of Big Shell, a terrorist group attacks and captures the President and holds not only him hostage, but the briefcase, known as the nuclear football, which is a thing, Josh. The nuclear football is an actual thing that presidents carry with them in case they have to launch a nuke just in case. So these terrorists have the president and they have the football, and they are not leaving until their demands are met. And who is sent to infiltrate Big Shell and you know, and
so wait, kind of bring this drama to end? Hold on a second. Okay. Because we got the president, we got football, and this game is releasing close to Thanksgiving. They must have sent the Dallas Cowboys in to get them, right?
Yes.
The entire Dallas Cowboys?
Well, see, here's the thing. This predates the Patriot dynasty. So, of course, at that time, the Cowboys would have been
That was America's team. Right?
But no, they couldn't afford the entire first string lineup of the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, so then they sent in Snake.
Yes. Agent Snake, commanded by Colonel Campbell, as always, Roy Campbell. He sneaks into Big Shell. He does some espionage stuff. And then he takes off his mask while he's riding an elevator to the surface. You know, Snake swims into a base, and then he beats some dudes up, and then he gets on an elevator. Pretty familiar here. And then as the elevator's going up, who do we find out Snake is? It's not the Snake we know.
It is.
Nah, nah, nah.
It is.
Nah, nah, nah.
It is Raiden from Mortal Kombat.
No, it's Raiden.
Oh, Raiden. Oh.
This is a funny callback. I remember we did this in the movie commentary, but it is actually Raiden this time.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, Raiden is a brand new secret agent in the mold of Solid Snake, and this is his first in-the-field mission, and he's being trusted to bring down, you know, this Dead Cell, this terrorist organization.
So we got Raiden, right? Raiden appears here, and that is where the world starts to freak out. Who is this guy? What is he doing to my Metal Gear?
Oh, if Twitter had existed at the time, you know, you imagine this comes out midnight, November 13th. I'd say by 2 a.m., you would start seeing Twitter trending. Where's Snake? Not my Snake. Yeah. Not my Snake. Who's this guy?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This was the Last of Us 2 freak out. Before The Last of Us 2. Oh my god. Kojima predicted The Last of Us 2 freak out.
I was going to say this for the end, but Neil Druckmann, I believe that's his name.
Yeah.
Said that the kind of setup of the characters in Metal Gear Solid 2 was a direct inspiration for what he did with The Last of Us Part 2.
Oh, interesting.
Just saying.
Interesting.
Just saying. He directly cited it as an influence.
But.
So yeah.
So. Raiden is our new character. He's our main character. People are freaking out because where is Solid Snake? Solid Snake died within 30 minutes of this game, and now we are given this new person that we didn't even know about. Nobody knew anything about this. And what I was wanting to talk about is because a couple years ago, same thing kind of happened. Do you remember when Halo 5 was announced and all of the promos leading up to Halo 5 was Master Chief is a traitor. He's getting hunted by this Spartan Locke and all this kind of stuff, right? And then the game comes out and it's not anything about that.
I did not know that, having not followed the Halo franchise as closely as you. But I did know that the game, you know, does center around another Spartan character besides Master Chief.
But
so you're saying that a similar thing happened.
Yeah, they had this whole big, like, the marketing campaign was this whole big story that they went and talked about. Now, I didn't play Halo 5, so I don't really know how accurate this actually is. But I've heard through the grapevine that this is really bad. It was people felt like they were lied to. Right. And that's the same thing that people felt like back in 2001 with this. Right. We just went through a very traumatic experience, right?
As a country,
right? And then 2 months later, Kojima's just like, whoop! Just pulls the rug right out from underneath us again, right?
right. I mean, it is not the first, nor is it the last time that, you know, a video game or a movie or a television show has used deceptive marketing to hide a reveal. Honestly, at this point in my life, I've come to just feel that, like, I don't have as much of a problem with it, because even with straightforward marketing nowadays, people, you know, whine and complain, you know, like, to no end. So I can see why studios and creators do this, because they're at least trying to keep hype going. Whether it's right or not, that's a conversation for another day.
Do you think at the time, if you would have gotten this on day one, that you would have been upset?
I can't say, because I was much younger. I didn't have an attachment to the series like I do now. You know, like, I don't... Like, back then, no. I don't think I would have cared. Honestly. Would you?
I really like Solid Snake, and...
Sure.
I think I would have been upset because of the character Raiden himself. He has not aged well. He is just this whiny little, like, 20-something-year-old, right? And listen, the first words out of his mouth, did you say nerd?
Is that really the first thing he says?
In the Kodak conversation, when he's like, Campbell was like, it's going to be on one of the nodes. Did you say nerd? No, nodes. It's like, I mean, oh my God. It's just, I don't know. I just don't like him as a character. And what they do with him later down the road in the series is so much better. He's more likable character. He's more machine
Here's the thing. I think that Raiden is perfect for what this story uses him for. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he is not Solid Snake, and Kojima very much did that on purpose, not only because he wanted to tell a certain kind of story and he knew Snake would not be good for this kind of story, but also there was a couple other complaints. Kojima said in an interview on the PlayStation blog several years ago that he felt that some complaints had come in from, like, female fans saying that, like, they're into it, but, like, the characters just all seemed a little bit too kind of, like, ridiculously macho. So he wanted to create a more toned-down character that he hoped would, like, attract more female fans to the Metal Gear Solid series. Now, of course, I remember back in the day, there was a lot of, in what I feel, very poorly aged complaints that, like, Raiden's a sissy, Raiden's basically a girly girl, you know, is he gay? You know, like, that was easy to throw around at the time, because the early 2000s were, in some cases, pretty awful. But what I will say about him in the future of the series, it's almost like, maybe I won't comment on the future of Raiden just yet. I want to talk about more of this game, but let's put a button in that.
Okay.
Talking about where Raiden goes in the future. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So Raiden's on the Big Shell trying to stop Dead Cell from, you know, causing a worldwide calamity. And as he starts moving... what do you mean?
Well, Dead Cell, the video game, plagiarism,
he IGN. He predicted Dead Cell. Yeah, no,
the IGN plagiarism review.
Kojima knew that this was going to happen. So, Josh, I'm going to list off the members of Dead Cell one by one, and I want you to tell me what their kind of specialties are, mm-hmm. or what their special powers are, all right?
Okay.
So, Fortune.
Giant ass rail gun. Nothing can hurt her. She can deflect bullets.
Yes.
Unlike Sniper Wolf.
Okay. Vamp.
He's a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot be killed.
Old Boy.
Old Boy was... Oh, which one was he? I don't remember Old Boy.
He's dead before the game started. I was just tricking
you.
Fat Man.
Fat Man's the one that I have a lot of things to say about Fat Man.
Oh my gosh. All right. So yeah, so we've got a squad of, you know, enhanced or supernatural super soldiers.
Yeah, your rogues gallery of this game. Right.
Kind of similar to Foxhound in the first game, you know. So Raiden starts exploring the facility, and right around the time he runs into Vamp, who else does Raiden run into, Josh?
Oh, Plissken.
Mm-hmm. Iroquois Plissken. And what can you tell me about Plissken?
Well, Plissken is, when I first saw this and he said the name, I went, oh! I got really excited. I got really excited because Plissken Snake, the main character to escape from New York and escape from L.A., right?
Yes.
Solid Snake, pretty much a version of him. The fact that they were able to merge those two together in a way. But it is voiced by David Hayter, and he is in no relations related to Solid Snake. He is just another person.
Not at all.
He was sent in a part of another team to help assist Raiden with this mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Iroquois Plissken, just another guy in the cast. David Hayter pulling double duty, voicing two characters. You know, you got to imagine Kojima was like, well, Snake's dead, so you can voice this Plissken guy. But here's a fun fact Snake. Yeah. Here's a fun fact about the now dead Solid Snake, though, Josh. You made a very good point of comparison there, because Kojima did say that Kurt Russell and his, you know, roles in those movies were a big influence on the creation of Solid Snake. Rest in peace. You know, gone forever. Never going to see him again. So with Plissken's help, Raiden starts, you know, infiltrating more of the Big Shell. And eventually he comes face to face with the first boss of the game, Fat Man, who is a kind of demolitions explosion expert, and he has rigged a big section of the Big Shell to explode. So, Josh, let's talk about Fat Man.
Fat Man, a giant guy, normal-sized man, a little bit taller than, I guess, Raiden.
I think he's pretty fat.
He's maybe like 6'2", 6'3", right?
Oh, okay.
But he's fat, right? He's a fat man. He's chubs. Fat man, right? He's husky.
And look, I'm chubby, so yeah. I'm not like body shaming anybody.
No, we're not body shaming. This is what he is. We're calling him like it is. Well, that's his name.
Game recognizing game, yeah.
Right?
So go ahead.
So he has like an explosive wear, like jacket type thing on.
Yeah, like Hurt Locker vest
Right. His face is a little scarred up because he's probably seen some explosions get a little too close to him or something like that. But what sets Fat Man apart of everybody else?
Rollerblades.
Inline skating.
He watched the movie Brink and he was like, yeah, that's how
I
want to live.
And I completely forgot about that going into this. And that came on and I went, are you effing kidding me? I was like, I'm biting my tongue right now. I'm trying to just forget that this game is 20 years old.
I mean, look. I feel that like a bargain anyone makes when they play a Hideo Kojima game is that you're going to get equal doses of like badass awesome moments and goofy what the hell
moments. But listen, you get a character like Vulcan Raven and then you get Fat Man.
But I mean, Josh, how is Vulcan Raven, who is basically just Dwayne the Rock Johnson but can talk to birds, any less ridiculous than Bomb Maker on rollerblades? I mean, I feel like they're in the same level of just craziness, and I'm into it. I'm into this kind of craziness. Just saying.
Okay.
So we defeat Fat Man, and then we run into a familiar sight. Who shows up, Josh?
The ninja, Gray Fox.
Yeah, but isn't Gray Fox dead?
No, he's alive.
But just like Solid Snake, we saw him die.
Well, yeah, you. We saw Solid Snake die, but
we saw Gray Fox die.
Well, we didn't see him die in this game.
So, okay, of course.
The other game happened so long ago, people forgot about it. It's a different console, different decade.
of course, right. So Raiden continues to explore the base, and, you know, along the way, he starts finding high-value targets. He finds the president, he finds an important member of the president's staff, and they all start dying of these, like, crazy heart attacks. You know, like just out of nowhere, they just drop dead after giving valuable information. And it, these vibes of Metal Gear Solid 1, they start getting more and more, you know, like, oh, wow, like people just dropping dead, huh? That seems really familiar.
The president didn't die of a heart attack. Ocelot shot him, I thought.
Well, no, the Ocelot shoots him, but the other guy, his chief of staff, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. You're us. Yeah. He dies of a heart attack. But your adventure eventually brings you to, like, this big showdown at the center of Big Shell with Vamp and Iroquois and this man with Doc Ark arms and electric shoes. Mm-hmm. And who is this man?
Well, that's Solid Snake. He's back from the dead.
He calls himself Solid Snake, but we can tell. I can tell that that's not Solid Snake.
Well, it's been a couple years. We don't know what mm-hmm. happened to him, right? Maybe 2 years ago, he used to be Skinny Man, and now he's Fat Man. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, people change in 2 years. People change during a quarantine, okay?
If the last 2 years have shown, yes, you can radically change. But yes, we meet a man who's been calling himself Solid Snake,
yep.
but we actually find out that this is Dead Cell leader Solidus Snake. Solidus.
Yep.
D-U-S.
Yep. The and third, Josh, the third brother, the third son, technically, I believe the first son of the trilogy of snakes. You have Solidus, mm-hmm. you had Solid, and you had Liquid.
Yep. So fans of Metal Gear lore will know that the original, well, we came to know the original protagonist of the series was Big Boss, the world's greatest soldier. He, when he was in a coma, they decided they were going to clone him. And yeah, Solidus is the first clone, but apparently wasn't good enough. So they cloned a set of twins that was Solid and Liquid, Solid being the now dead previous hero of this franchise and Liquid being the bad guy from the first game. But now we got a brand new Snake to contend with. And right as Solidus shows up and says, I'm Solid Snake, Iroquois does this really weird thing. He goes, no, that man is not Solid Snake. and then suddenly, Solid Snake's alive again, Josh.
Yeah, it's so weird. How did he end up in that helicopter?
It was Plissken the whole time.
Oh my god.
I never saw that nope. coming. I was blown away.
Floored. Because he didn't have his bandana on.
Exactly. Once he put it on, it was like, oh, it's like a librarian taking her glasses off and then she's attractive.
Yeah.
It's like, they like putting his bandana
Superman
on.
And Clark Kent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Without the bandana, it's nothing.
No.
So we had this big confrontation. It's kind of like, I would argue, the midway boss fight of the game. You manage to push back Solidus and Vamp, who is helping him. And then you and Solid Snake, and by extension, Solid Snake's BFF, Otacon, you're now on the same page. You're trusting each other. And it's like, we've got to get to the bottom of what's going on in Big Shell. Because these terrorists, they seem to be after something way bigger than just the president. And I mean, the president's dead now. So like, what's even going on?
Right.
So you press on.
Well, I want to talk really quick, though, about the first game here for just a split second, okay? So at the end of Metal Gear Solid 1, you know, mm-hmm. after the credits, you had Ocelot talking in the original Metal Gear Solid 1. And at the very end, he talks about, you know, he's talking to somebody on a phone. And at the very end, he says, as you wish or whatever, something, 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 Mr. President, right? The president at the time of that first game is actually Solidus Snake.
Yep.
Which was crazy. Cause I didn't know about that. I didn't like put those pieces together until just playing it this time where I was
you know how you find that out. You watch the cutscenes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But no, it was one of those things. Cause like, I was like, wait, like, and I was like, okay, so it's actually been a couple years since the Shadow Moses incident. So yeah, there technically would be a new president at that time. Like, yeah. And that, I was so, like, oh my God, like, okay.
No, absolutely. Because canonically, Metal Gear Solid 1 takes place in 2005. And Metal Gear Solid 2, the tanker episode starts in 07, and then Big Shell is happening in 2009. So yeah, exactly as you said, Barack Obama is president by the time this happens.
Yeah.
So Solidus Snake, ex-president, decides, you know, I don't want to be president anymore. I want to be a terrorist leader with Doc Ock arms.
Yeah.
So,
which I really like. So I really like the look of Solidus Snake.
I think he looks badass. You know what I mean? Like, besides Dr. Octopus, he looks like Cable. He looks like, you know, he looks like what Kurt Russell looks like now.
Yeah.
He just looks like what a modern day Marvel superhero or something would look like. Just great. Truly great. So Raiden and team, they get together and they're trying to push forward further into Big Shell because something bigger seems to be going on here. I mean, the president's already dead. So what is Dead Cell actually after? And as they keep pushing on, they discover that Big Shell is not really an environmental cleanup effort. It is a cover for what's underneath Big Shell.
But what's underneath Big Shell?
A mobile underwater battle station called Metal Gear Arsenal. A giant, basically, submarine fortress that is a Metal Gear. You know, it can launch a nuclear weapon from anywhere. And the government was apparently building this in secret. And Dead Cell found out about it because, you know, their leader used to be the president. And Dead Cell are going after it. So Raiden and Snake are like, we've got to stop them. But who do we find out is working on the Metal Gear Arsenal project?
Ooh.
Someone very close to our trio of heroes.
Ooh, that would be Otacon's sister. I was going to say daughter, but I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. Sister. Sister.
Emma Emmerich. Stepsister, to be technical, because like as we go on the mission to rescue Emma, we find out more about their family history, and we find out the really messed up backstory behind this family. So I don't know if you fully remember this, but Otacon in the first game talks about his grandfather was part of the Manhattan Project, which produced the nuclear bombs that were used on Japan in World War II. So this at this
you mean,
point,
you mean he was a part of the Ninja Turtles 3, the video game?
No. He was part of the Fat Man and Little Boy. Fat Man, one of the bombs dropped in Japan.
Okay.
It gets bigger. Yeah. I even forgot about that. I didn't have that in my notes, but now I'm like, So yeah, he was part of the bombs dropped in Japan. Family history. And now Emma is working on Metal Gear, you know, kind of inadvertently continuing her family legacy of creating weapons of mass destruction. So in your attempt to, you know, get Emma and get her out so that she can hopefully team up with you guys, what happens, Josh?
Oh, she gets got.
She gets got in a pretty upsetting way.
Well, hold on. Let's go back though, because you know we got Emma, right? She's like, oh, I'm a scientist, and I'm out here in the middle of this tanker. We also find out that Kojima predicted The Last of Us Part One because Emma can't swim. Ellie couldn't swim.
I'm just
letting you know.
The predictions never end. Now, here's a question I want to ask you. How did you feel about the swimming sections of this game? Because to elaborate for viewers, there is a point where you have to help Emma swim through some submerged, damaged parts of the big shell. And
you mean an escort mission underwater?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. You have to manage both Raiden's oxygen levels and Emma's oxygen levels. Josh, talk to me about this.
It was terrible. It is frustrating. Because even, like, controlling your character in the game, like, it's way too... I think it's way too sporadic. It moves too fast, right? And then when you're underwater, it's like... I don't know. It felt, like, kind of heavy, but quick at the same time. Like, I don't know. Like, it was...
Fast but clunky.
Yeah.
You know, like, he moves quick, but he also has
like
the handling of a Hummer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The way that, like, the buttons control his movement of how fast or slow he can go, it's like no human would swim like this, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I took a swimming class in college back when I was actually fit, and you don't swim like that. Like, it's ridiculous the way he, like, noodles about underwater. I hate it. Yeah, that this is arguably, in my opinion and a lot of gamers' opinions, the worst, like, gameplay section of this entire game, especially because of how high stakes it is. If Emma drowns, you got to do it all over again. So not fun.
Nope.
And it's also frustrating because no matter, even if you do succeed, Emma dies tragically.
Like 2 minutes later.
Yeah, Vamp shows back. Yeah, Vamp shows back up. Despite multiple, like, defeats of Vamp, he shows back up, stabs her. Like, she just has the worst day of anyone's life in this game. And then you bring her dying body, not yet a corpse, but her dying body to Otacon. And they reunite and kind of make peace with the horrible childhood they had because Otacon's dad was a piece of crap. And you actually find out more about that in Metal Gear Solid 5. But anyway, how did you feel about this? I thought this was... Honestly, after you get through all the frustrating crap, this is one of the real more emotional moments of the game. What did you think about this, John?
Yeah, I think, well, once Emma gets stabbed, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I remember playing it the first time. I was like, there's no way that they're going to kill her, especially after what we just went through with her. And they did it. And I was like, wow. Oh, I feel terrible for her right now. I feel bad for everybody, right? Like... It hits emotionally.
Right. Because, you know, you're not just sad for Otacon. Like, you see basically the brotherhood that Snake and Hal, Otacon Emmerich, have for each other. You know, like, Snake knows this is terrible for him. But, you know, he helps his friend to his feet and he's like, listen, listen, there's bigger stakes out there. You know, we're trying to save the world. Just pull it together, buddy, you know? And it's beautiful, honestly. And then you got that badass shot of the three of them. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to take down Arsenal gear no matter what. It's just like, it's sad, but also like, oh, hell yeah, we're going to do it,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So at this point, the ninja shows back up and you're like, what? And Snake's like, sorry, kid. And then the ninja knocks you out. And where do you wake up, Josh?
You wake up, chained to almost like the same torture thing as the first Metal Gear Solid game.
Mm-hmm.
Naked.
You're all strung up, and Solidus is there, and Ocelot's there, and Solidus reveals that he's actually known you for a lot longer than you even realized. Parts of Jack's past that we hadn't explored yet come to light, and we find out that Jack was a child soldier, and that Solidus, when he was a soldier, actually kind of like saved Jack and like quote unquote adopted him. The amount of things that Solidus apparently did in his life is actually kind of insane. But, you know, we'll ride with it. So that happens, you know. So Raiden gets freed by Olga Gerlukovich, who I forgot to mention. She was on the tanker at the beginning of the game. She was part of the group of Russians that Ocelot betrayed in the tanker level. And you see her sporadically throughout the game. You know, she's
the ninja,
a baddie. Well, spoilers, Josh. Oh. I hadn't gotten to that yet. I'm gonna, you know, but yes, we do find out she frees you, and you're like, what? Like, why would Olga free me? And then, you know, eventually find out it's because she's the ninja. So anyway, she's the ninja, and you find out that she was playing both sides, if you will.
Yep.
Like, she was helping Solidus and Dead Cell because, hang on, I have to get this straight, because this is where the narrative.
Well, her dad was shot at
up.
The beginning from Ocelot, and like, yeah, part of it was she wanted to get back at him for that, but it also had to deal with the thing that we didn't even talk about yet. In this game, if you need to describe something, or if you need to ask yourself why, there's only one word that you need to say.
Patriots.
Right? In Metal Gear Solid 4, if you have to ask yourself why, it's nanomachines. Right?
Yes.
Like, it's just the Patriots. Like,
it's the Patriots.
It's the Patriots.
The Patriots, who we learn are this secret shadow society of 12 people, the Wiseman's Committee, who are the real controllers of America. You know, they decide who wins the presidential elections, they make all the big decisions, and what we know as a democracy is just an act.
Yeah.
It's just an entertainment show for the American people to feel like they're,
it's pretty much the Illuminati.
Right, exactly. So Olga, throughout this game, has been playing both sides. She is working with Ocelot and all of them because the Patriots kidnapped her child and said, if you don't help them with their mission, we're going to kill your kid. But simultaneously, she was running around as the ninja and, you know, quietly helping Raiden because she wanted revenge on Ocelot for killing her dad during the Taker incident. Olga frees you. You run around naked for a little bit. And then you bump into Snake. Snake gives you all your equipment back.
And a sword.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Not going to lie. So Snake and Raiden have a little bit of like a pretty cool team up, you know, like you're fighting enemies and all that. And then Fortune shows up, the last surviving member of Dead Cell that we know of. And she's like, Snake, I want you dead because my dad was also on the tanker. Like, a lot of dead dads on that tanker, basically. So Snake tells Raiden, go on ahead. I have to have a showdown. So Raiden goes on. And as he continues to, you know, infiltrate Metal Gear Arsenal, this big underwater fortress, what starts happening with his codec calls with Colonel Campbell?
Oh, they start going crazy. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing this the first time and I was like, something's off. And it wasn't even what was being said. It was, I was watching him. I was watching Campbell himself. And every now and then he would like turn into like a skeleton, or like there would be like a skeleton like overlay over him. I was like, something's off. Something's weird. Like, it's getting creepy. And he's just saying really weird stuff. One of the weirdest things was like, I pay my wife divorce alimony or something like that, and that's why you had to pay for my lunch last week.
Or that big infamous thing where he's like,
I hear it's amazing when the famous purple stuffed worm in Flapjaw Space with the tuning fork does a raw blink on Harry Carey Rock. I need scissors. 61.
It's like, almost like there's a glitch. Something's breaking. Something's not right. Something's not real.
And something is breaking. And we find out very shortly after. So Raiden goes up to the top of Metal Gear Arsenal. And what's there? 25 Metal Gear Ray units, all controlled by AI.
Yep.
And now, depending on which difficulty of the game you play this on, you have to fight all 25 if you're at the highest difficulty. If you're playing on, like, very easy, you basically just have to, like, get through 1.5, like, using your rocket launcher to like, either destroy or cripple them. But they come out in waves, like, 2 at a time, up to 25, depending on the difficulty.
So here, I have another little gripe.
Go for it.
Metal Gear. The ultimate weapon. The sure. ultimate machine. They have 25 plus of these machines, right? Yeah. These are the ultimate thing ever. In about 5 minutes, one person with a Stinger rocket launcher takes out all of them. The ultimate machines, the ultimate weapon of mass destruction.
Here is my in-game legit theory for this. Here's my in-game legit theory. Metal Gear Ray, which is the successor to the first game's Metal Gear Rex. So Metal Gear Rex was this big honking thing. How did you defeat Metal Gear Rex? You had to blow up the little satellite dish on its roof. Because without the satellite dish, the pilot has no view, right? Metal Gear Ray seems to have streamlined that by being like an AI-operated machine. But the other big thing is that Ray can operate in land or in water. It can swim or walk on land. And as a result, it's much skinnier. It's a much like thinner robot design. Like Rex was big and beefy, mm-hmm. and its weakness was lack of sight. And Ray is like slim and fast. But I think the trade-off for that is that Ray was probably made of like a flimsier design. You know what I mean? I think that is the trade-off. And why it was probably so conceivably destroyed by rocket launchers, you know? And thus why they had so many of them. They knew that they wouldn't hold up as well, so we got to make more. Hmm. Maybe that's just internal logic I've built up over the years. Right. Is it actually true? I don't know. But that's what I'll throw out
there. Okay.
If you run a Metal Gear Solid wiki and want to tell us the real answer, I don't care. Don't reach out. But anyway. So after you start busting up some of these rays, they start freaking out. Like, really, they start losing their minds and they start shutting down. And what you come to find out is that the efforts of Snake and Otacon and Raiden to stop Metal Gear Arsenal, which involved uploading a virus. I guess we forgot to mention that.
Emma had the virus, and that's what
Emma had the virus
with the last thing that she did before she died. She gave it over so they can do it, and it failed. But it seems like from the time that they tried to upload it from there to this moment here, it actually started working.
They thought they failed, but they did it. The Metal Gears start freaking out. Solidus shows up and he's like, you know, God damn it. You ruined everything. I stole this big warship. I had all these Metal Gear Rays and now they're useless because of your virus.
Because your USB flash drive.
Yeah, I'm just going to shoot you in the head. He does like the sensible villain thing of, why don't I just kill you? You know, not, you know what I mean? But right before he can do that, Ocelot starts monologuing. And this is one of those, you know, long cutscenes Josh mentioned, but it's the most important one. Ocelot reveals that this entire experience, everything that we have done so far, has actually been a big organized simulation run by the Patriots, who Ocelot is working for, and it was all designed to create a program that could train soldiers that would be as good as Solid Snake. And yeah, how does that program work,
Josh? It was pretty much recreating the Shadow Moses incident from the first game.
Yeah. You've got a group of supernatural terrorists who take over a high-value agency, and an agent has to sneak in and defeat them one by one and stop a big robot. The surface level details change, but everything about it is really similar. And we were joking about it throughout the episode, but that's what the big reveal is. It's like, oh, holy crap. So Ocelot's like, I've got it. Like, that's the ultimate weapon. This Metal Gear is not the ultimate weapon. It's the data that will allow us to make more solid snakes. So I'm going to kill you all and peace out. And right before he can do this, Josh, tell us what happens.
Oh, wait, is this where his arm freaks out? His arm freaked out. He's like, meh, meh. And it goes full Idle Hands right there, right? Like, his arm starts to freak out. Very, very Idle Hands, very Evil Dead 2. And it's because, you might remember from the first Metal Gear Solid game, he had his arm cut off, okay?
Oh, that's right. How did he get a brand new arm? What happened there?
Well, they apparently, in the destruction of everything from the first game, they were able to find Liquid Snake's body. He had a perfectly good arm. So they decided, you know what, let's just take the arm off, leave the rest of the body. We don't need it for any type of experiments or anything like that. Let's sew his arm onto my arm. Nothing bad's going to come from it. But apparently,
but what happened?
Liquid Snake is starting to infect slash manifest slash possess Ocelot Revolver. So now he's slowly turning into Liquid Snake again.
So now Liquid in Ocelot's body is like, hey, I'm still a little stinker like I was in the first game. And Ocelot thought he was going to work for the Patriots. Well, I'm actually going to destroy the Patriots because I don't want to do anything but blow up the world because I hate the fact that people think Solid Snake's better than me. So he pieces out on the last Metal Gear Ray. He's like, I have Ocelot's brain now. I'm going to hunt the Patriots down one by one and kill them. So Snake literally jumps off of Metal Gear Arsenal. It's super. Snake breaks his handcuffs that he was handcuffed behind his back. He's so swole, he breaks them and then jumps off and dives after Metal Gear Ray. Like, you know, I'll just grab onto it or something. So that leaves Raiden alone on top of Metal Gear Arsenal with Solidus Snake. And Metal Gear Arsenal is now out of control. And what happens with it, Josh?
Doesn't it like crash into the city?
It crashes into New York City. Now,
which
so again, released 2 months after 9/11.
I didn't remember what section, city it broke. It crashed into, uh-oh. But yeah, I remember you said the Hudson. That's why I was like, ah.
Yeah, this part of the game had to be rapidly and hurriedly edited because apparently the cutscene of it crashing was heavily detailed. It knocked over the Statue of Liberty. It kind of like barreled down one of the main streets of New York City, you know what I mean? The main avenues. So they were like, all right, let's not have this happen. But it crashes into Federal Hall, and Solidus and Raiden are on the roof, and Solidus is just kind of like, I'm having a real bad day. All my plans, poof, up in smoke. I'm really upset about this. I'm going to kill you. And Raiden gets one last codec call from Colonel Campbell. But is it really Colonel Campbell, Josh?
We don't know. I don't think it is.
The reveal in this section is that Colonel, who you thought you were talking to the whole game, who you thought was Colonel Campbell, and other support staff members, like, you know, Jack's girlfriend, Rose, we forgot to mention, she's also on the codec call. She's the one you call to save the game.
When we get to the end of it, I'm gonna sum up some stuff, and I want to talk about Rose for a split second then.
Right. But they... You know, you thought the whole time they were your mission handlers and they were in some base somewhere. No, you were never talking to them. You were talking to the artificial intelligence of Metal Gear Arsenal, which was controlled by the Patriots. And here we find out not only like the big final twist of the game, but basically Kojima's entire thesis statement of what he wanted to say with this game. So these AI, they tell you just straight up, they're like, no, the point of all this was not to create a program that will make new solid snakes. The point of all this was to create a program that will prove that human beings can be easily manipulated and fed any information that we give them, and they will take it. And Raiden's like, how dare you, like, you don't have any right, people have free will, what, you know, why do you think you deserve to do this? And this is, I'm gonna read verbatim, this is like dialogue combined, but this is the iconic, the haunting paragraph that the AI, you know, monologues to Jack during the finale of the game. In the current digitized world, trivial information is accumulating every second, preserved in all of its triteness. Never fading, always accessible. Rumors about petty issues, misinterpretations, slander, all this junk data preserved in an unfiltered state, growing at an alarming rate. It will only slow down social progress, reduce the rate of evolution. The digital society furthers human flaws and selectively rewards development of convenient half-truths. Everyone withdraws into their own small gated community, afraid of a larger forum. They stay inside their little ponds, leaking whatever truth suits them into the growing cesspool of society at large. These different cardinal truths neither clash nor mesh. No one is invalidated, but nobody is right. We seek not to control content, but to create context. The entire game was about information control and what people have actually put in front of them in the digital world and whether or not it's true or like reliable. What do you think about any to all of that, Josh?
Well, if the past year and a half has not...
Year and a half?
Well...
Go ahead.
If the past year and a half has not brought this to light, right? Like, I feel like humanity is doomed. But the thing is, you know, a lot of people won't see this. You know what I mean? They won't see that text. And they're, if you tell them, like, oh, this is from something from 2001.
No, no. Not my America. Like,
I agree with you in the last, like, year and a half, 2 years, because of things like, you know, the QAnon movement. Obviously, misinformation about all kinds of things. But I would just go as far back as 2015, 2016, the last 5 to 6 years of the evolution of social media and digital society across the world. Like, here are all the things that I think of when I hear this monologue. I think of social media misinformation, using social media to shut out viewpoints you don't want to hear. You know, like if you and somebody get into a disagreement, you unfriend them, you remove them from your algorithm, and you never have to consider an alternate point of view. Foreign internet trolls influencing American viewpoints online, like the Russian agents who manipulated the 2016 election. Oversaturation of media content such as memes. You know, I like myself a good meme, a good meme-y, you know what I mean? But sometimes memes just don't die and they just pile up, you know what I mean? Alternate facts, deep fake AI technology where we can, you know, create things that aren't even real, yep, but people can believe them. Kojima predicted like borderline the majority of the last decade,
yeah,
of how we've grown as a culture and a society. And it's terrifying to go back to this game and realize that.
One more thing that he predicted.
One more thing. But beyond all that scariness, I also want to throw something else at you real quick here. I made another like note that beyond all of those things, what I think this game also kind of dives into is the concept of gamers as puppets. So I feel like you and like, you know, most people who probably would listen to this are aware of the infamous twist of BioShock, where you think your character is, you know, on this kind of mission and you're the hero and yada, yada, yada. And you find out that you've been tricked because you, the main character, were programmed to always obey this command that one character gave out where he said, "Would you kindly?" You know, that was the trigger. But like it was like kind of a symbolic thing of like that represents how video games are based around a little bit of like obedience on the gamer's part. You know what I mean? If we don't obey the game, then what are we doing?
Right.
We can't play a video game.
Tom.
Yeah.
I'm going to break your brain right now.
Go for it.
What when you're on Big Shell?
Yeah.
What is the bad guy's plan? Like what is the whole thing with the group? Right.
Dead Cell or the Patriots?
The Dead Cell. Dead Cell.
Dead Cell's whole thing is kidnap the president and hold him and the nuclear football hostage to have their ransom demands met.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right? So you mean to tell me that a former president of the United States unleashed some sort of terroristic attack amongst its own people.
To have their demands met? Let's put the Kojima counter up, ding. One more. That's great. That's actually fantastic, and I love that. I'm serious. I love that. But I just want to add, while I'm still on this train. Like, through Raiden, I felt like Sons of Liberty commentates on how, like, we as gamers don't have as much choice as we think we do. How we're basically just, you know, puppets to the story of a game, and how we can be tricked. Not just as in, like, Raiden was tricked into making decisions that played into the Patriots' plan, but, like, we're tricked into sometimes repeating cycles of gameplay that we've seen before. Like, you know, we can repeat an entire Metal Gear game that's basically the plot of the first one, but just kind of accept it. You know what I mean? Because we're along for the ride. Yeah. I think the worst examples of that are, like, low-effort reboots and annualized sequels that get lazier and lazier every year. But, you know, we kind of fall into those patterns.
Why do you think there's so many Transformers movies out there?
Okay, yeah. Not even as gamers. Yes, as moviegoers. Any kind of medium, you know, if you just become a puppet of what you're interacting with, what are you giving up?
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
It is. It's crazy. It's very deep. Peeling back the layers, though, like, it's just insane how deep this goes. How much there actually was there, you know, and we didn't see it as 13-year-olds, you know what I mean? At that time, you know, like, we wouldn't have been able to dive as deep into it like we could now. And that's why, that's why I love doing the podcast, though. You know what I mean? I love talking about the games in a new light. It is being able to go back and see things. It's like when you go back and watch a movie, you know, from earlier, you know, in your life, and you're like, oh man, I never remembered that joke, or now I understand this, and I take this, I understand the context of this now, and so on and so on and so on. And it's just insane to see what this game was trying to do at the time.
And then the cherry on top of it all is that, like, the final boss fight against Solidus, like, Raiden, like, point blank is just like, so you want me to kill Solidus, like, Patriot AI? I'm not going to do it. And they're like, you have no choice, because if you don't kill him, he'll kill you. So really, you have no free will. Like, you have to kill him. And we, like, it's like, he realizes, oh, they're right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that last level of control is, we just told you our evil plan, and you just got to deal with it, because what are you going to do otherwise? Right. And it's like, ah, holy crap.
So you fight
Solidus. Yeah, you fight Solidus and you kill him. And then on the crowded streets of New York City, where everyone's freaking out over this, you know, this large vehicle attack in 2001, you run into Solid Snake. He's like, I'm alive. I put a tracker on Liquid. I'm going to go hunt him down. And then Raiden and him, they have this really interesting conversation about what just happened and what's revealed. Snake is kind of like, yeah, like, I found out the truth too. And they talk about truth. Like, one of the last conversations in the game is this cutscene where Raiden and Snake are like, what's real? What's true? What's worth believing in and holding on to? And, you know, it ends on this note where Snake is just like, that's not something that can be easily defined or easily figured out. But you have to put the work in yourself to find out what is real, what matters, and you've got to hold on to that, you know? He basically says it's your responsibility, because if you don't take responsibility for it, people like the Patriots will try to do it for you. But what did you want to, what else do you want to add on about kind of the whole last, like, 45 minutes of this?
No, I mean,
I know I've been going on for a while.
No, I mean, you summed it up perfectly. Right. And in the dialogue, I think we had really shows through. And I hope, you know, you guys in the comments section, let us know what you think. Let us know if you make it this far, because we're about an hour and a half into recording right now. So it's going to be a meaty episode for you guys. And I hope you guys are going to enjoy every single thing that you hear. We definitely want to know what you guys think. But with every episode or everything that I'm a little weary about, we always have the Josh Yeager gripes. Right. What don't I like? What didn't I like? What are some things that bothered me? Right.
Sure.
We got roller skating Fat Man. Yes. Right? We got roller skating for that, man. We have Rose in general. Listen, we did this entire podcast and we didn't mention Rose until the very end, which just shows how important she was in this game. Her that story between her and Jack, or her and Raiden, didn't need the, it could have not been in this game, and nothing would have changed.
Possibly. Well, I mean,
her only reason for being in the game is the Savior game, which could have just been Mei Ling.
You're right. I mean, you know, I effectively described the plot of this game and I didn't really get into her. I think she's useful for like Jack's character development in many ways. She's like his connection to the real world, or like that's kind of just another layer of how evil the Patriots' plan is that they even manipulated him with a fake version of his loved one. You know, like Rose is real. You know, he meets her at the end of the game in the streets and she basically kind of says like, you know, I was, you know, the Patriots kind of, I believe there's an implication that she also was kidnapped by the Patriots and was like,
she was working, you know, for them. Yeah. She was some sort of like a spy for, she was a spy for the Patriots and she ended up falling in love with him.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. So again, more control, more manipulation, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. She's not as vital as she could have been in that, you know, you can, as we did, we brisked right over her.
Right.
What are any other thoughts you might have?
I don't like the name, the Lalelulelo. I don't like that at all. But just say Patriots. Just say the Patriots. Right,
let's go over here how many code names there have been for the enemies in this game. There's Lalelulelo. There is Dead Cell. There is Sons of Liberty. There is the Patriots. There is the Wiseman's Committee. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They have so many names.
And it's all the same stuff, right? Like,
same stuff.
First
game, it was just Foxhound. Just Foxhound, you know?
Raiden gets all of his training done by playing Metal Gear Solid VR missions. Which he specifically says.
He does. But...
That just makes VR missions canon in the Metal Gear Solid universe.
I love that personally. But if you think about it, again, it goes back to what the perceived plan was. You know, like Raiden talks early how this is his first field mission because, like, as you just said, all of his other training sessions were in virtual reality. Like, Snake even kind of, when he's Iroquois Plissken, Snake kind of makes fun of him for it. He's like, you did all that in VR, kid. Like, you got to get out in the real world, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The game opens up with Solid Snake running through New York with active camouflage, gets on a boat, and it shorts out because it's raining. What was the point of the active camouflage?
I think it's a combination of, like, they wanted the badass moment of the opening, but then they were like, this is OP, let's just find a reason to...
Honestly, I think they just wanted to get that Terminator 1, Terminator 2 look, with him crouched down, with the lightning bolts going around him, and then him kind of forming from it. Very Terminator 1 and 2.
Look, I think it rules, man. Like, the shot of him standing up on the tanker deck in the rain, like, look, it rules. Even if it means getting rid of the invisible thing.
Oh, my,
like,
God. Mark another one up. Kojima predicted the boat fight from Captain America Winter Soldier.
He did? Oh, that's phenomenal. Oh, ding.
And then the last thing, the last problem that I have that I can think of that I have written down is, why does the president grab Raiden's dick when they first meet?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I don't know if that is supposed to be something that maybe a Japanese audience will get.
He grabbed his junk and he said, oh, you're a man.
I don't get that. I really don't. It's something I've never understood. And maybe I have to look it up because I really don't. I don't know. I don't know if that's supposed to be comedy or cringe or what. I don't know. I can't tell you. It's weird.
It's weird.
Some of that Kojima weirdness. And I think maybe it's a cultural weirdness thing that'll just never translate, you know? So
what about you? Any gripes that you had?
Like I said, the Emma section, pretty bad. I'm not trying to be overly positive that I can't offer a critical eye. It's just, I think so much of this game still holds up, Josh. And I think so much of this game is just, like, wonderful to get lost in. I really do have very few problems with it. I kind of just wanted to, like, I just think they botched it with swimming. Like, swimming is the most miserable part of this game. And I kind of also wonder if they realized it was bad and that's why there's so little of it, but it just sucks. I did not like it. This game's legacy, because it's got a pretty big one. Let's talk about the negative first. So we were talking about Raiden earlier, how nobody really liked him, and you wanted to mention how he changed as the series went on. So tell us a little bit of what happens to Raiden.
I mean, Raiden starts to become more machine. He gets, you know, he got nanocells, and he pretty much turns into a functioning robot. He loses a lot of his body parts, and they're constantly being replaced. And he's over the top. He is a human version of an anime character.
Yeah, he becomes kind of the new Gray Fox, you know, yeah. the cybernetically enhanced ninja. And part of me kind of wonders, and I've kind of heard, like, seen this online, so it's not fully my original theory, but I really wonder if, like, Kojima purposefully was like, you didn't like Raiden because he wasn't badass enough. Well, I'm going to make him the most over-exaggerated badass ninja warrior ever.
Yeah.
And just shove him down your throat. Yeah. And you're going to have to deal with it. You know, like, I kind of wonder if that was just, like, his retort. Because it he does be. Become, like you said, cartoonishly over, like, ridiculous.
Yes. But
how far he goes.
I want to say, though, like, we talk about the legacy of this game. The thing is, I haven't played 3, okay? And hold on. I know. I played a little bit of 5 and so on and so on. And I've played other ones and I've beaten other ones. Would you consider this, of the main series, so with the 5 games, do you consider this, where do you put it? Because, like, really, because personally, I feel like if you talk to everyone, they're going to put this in last place.
Well, see, that's, yeah, I do think history has been kind to this game. And I do feel like there has been a reevaluation where people were like, we were unfair to this game. And you know what I mean?
It's like Spec Ops: The Line. When it came out, nobody cared about it. But years later, it blew up.
Because something else I just realized I wanted to mention, you said that, like, you didn't think Raiden works for this game. And just in my opinion, when we talk about the player as, like, a puppet, that's what I think Raiden plays into. It's the fact that Kojima's like, here's a new, like, the levels of control. Kojima's saying, here's a new character, but I know you're going to play the game. And that's, like, his control over
well,
us.
Well, my idea of why they chose Raiden was, think about, like, in movies. Because, you know, Kojima is a big film buff.
Absolutely. Right?
In movies, you usually have that character who is the viewer.
Sure.
And I feel like Raiden is the viewer in this game, where he's the one that's asking all the questions. He's the one that's trying to figure out the world. He's asking the questions that we have while we're playing, and everything's being explained to him so we understand it.
Right. Snake would probably know too much. Or, correct. You know, like, because of how much Snake does tell Raiden. So it can't be Snake. Again, yeah, that's a really great point, Josh. Absolutely. So, yeah, I think for a long time, a lot of people were like, this is the worst Metal Gear game. This is the worst Metal Gear. Because Snake Eater came out. And Snake Eater, man, Snake Eater's phenomenal. And Snake Eater even pokes fun at Raiden. you said you haven't played it. But here's the thing. When you start the game, it asks you a quick question. It says, is this your first Metal Gear Solid experience? And you get to pick, like, I've never played any of them. I have only played the NES games, or I've only played the PS1 and PS2 games. And if you pick that third one, I've only played in the opening sequence, like, Snake parachutes down into the jungle. And when he lands and takes off his mask, it's Raiden. And then he pulls it off. It's another. It was like a disguise, and then you have a Raiden disguise mask through the rest of the game that you can use.
That's funny.
But he looks right at the camera too. He like lands, pulls it off, and then goes like a big like, hey, you know, like it's really funny. I think I've said this to you, but I definitely have said this to people. I think at this point in 2021, Metal Gear Solid 3 is the best kind of beginning to end story in the series. It's in terms of quality, consistency. But Metal Gear Solid 5 is the only kind of Metal Gear experience I want ever again. With the options, the freedom, the refined gameplay. Like,
okay,
that's
so let me
but two
so let me
two.
let me look at it like this. So the way you're talking about that, are you saying like Ocarina of Time is still up there, but you won't accept another Zelda game that's not like Breath of the Wild?
Oh yeah, yeah, it is the same thing. Like I am so blown away by what Breath of the Wild let me do that I can't imagine a reductive Zelda game, you know what I mean? Like, or at the very least, it probably has to be like Metroid rules now, where like the 3D Metroids are one thing and the 2Ds are another. 3D Zeldas have to be Breath of the Wild style going forward, and 2D Zeldas can be their own separate thing. That's why I'm not honestly really excited for Skyward Sword coming out, because it's like, no, like Breath of the Wild was a response to the lack of freedom that Skyward Sword
right,
was.
Right.
But Metal Gear Solid 2, I would say there's a top three, and it's Snake Eater, Phantom Pain, and Sons of Liberty. I think Sons of Liberty makes the top three because I really appreciate what it meant to the PlayStation 2 era and what it meant to me in my younger years. I think it still holds up very well. And even though it's not completely consistent and it has some rough spots, what this game does on a narrative and kind of thematic level is so huge that it's bigger. It's bigger than most of the franchise because of what it pulled off, in my opinion. What about you?
So I was thinking the entire time we were talking about this game, my opinion of the game actually changed a little bit.
Okay.
So I have never played 3, and I've only played maybe an hour of 5. Okay. So my current ranking of Metal Gear Solid games is 1, 4, 2, 3, and 5.
Okay.
And it's just
because I have yet to play 4. So that actually has me really excited because I've always wanted to. And if you put it that high, it must be really
good. You still have my copy of it, right?
No, I gave it back to you and I gave your PS3 back because we determined that it was available on PlayStation Now. Okay. So that's how I'm going to try to play it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Okay.
When going into this, I was thinking that it was going to be pretty low. Talking about how ahead of its time the game actually was, I think that I would excuse my gripes of gameplay and cheesiness of the story for what's the word I'm looking for?
Like historical precedent is so important.
I think that it will actually it hits more now, right? There's a stronger impact, and that's why I mean I like these conversations because I went from thinking that this is my least favorite of them. Even I didn't even play 3, but I just know from what I've heard, 3 is like one of the better ones out there. So that might change. That might change with my thing. It might go below 3, right? But from the ones that I've played, I'm sorry, but Dead Cells / Sons of Liberty are my least favorite group of all the Metal Gear games.
Okay.
I don't think that they hit as well as the other games. Now, I don't know about 5. I don't know if 5 has a group.
They do. They do. I won't spoil what it is, but they do. And, you know, yeah, I get it. It. Like, the fact that, like, the in-game thing is, like, they're just meant to be a repeat of Foxhound hurts them a little bit. I think, like, Fortune probably has the most interesting story and arc. And Fat Man's notable because how crazy he is. What's your take on Vamp?
Vamp's awesome. And I can't wait for you to play 4.
Okay. Okay. Last bit of legacy I want to touch on because I think you'll find this interesting. And we're not going to, I know we're hitting the 2-hour mark, Josh, but just hear me out.
Yeah, I'm good.
So I want to talk about the number of games that have cited Metal Gear Solid 2 as an influence. So Portal, the creators of Portal said that like the meta narrative of this game inspired their meta narrative within Portal, you know, commentating on like player control, who's really in power, things like that. BioShock, obviously, we talked about that already. Gears of War and Resident Evil 4 both said that like the combat system in this was a jumping off point for what they eventually did. And as you said, like you wanted a more refined third person experience. They did eventually get there. And then what I think is probably the most valuable to you is articles I found on IGN and Game Critics, which I guess used to be a website.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The developers of Splinter Cell said that they specifically created that franchise to be a Metal Gear Solid 2 killer. So I know the big love you have for the Splinter Cell franchise. Mm-hmm. If this game had not come out, Ubisoft would never have tried to take it down.
Yeah.
So you got to give them credit there.
Yeah. No, and don't get me wrong. Like between the two of them, honestly, and I might get a lot of flack for this, I enjoy the Splinter Cell franchise more than the Metal Gear Solid franchise. Right.
Okay.
And I just do that. I just do because I feel like the world of Sam Fisher and what you can do in those games, I feel like that's more of a stealth spy type game than the Metal Gear Solid games are. Because listen, like the way that Metal Gear controls, it is very arcadey, where it's very fast, very quick, very, it's not slow paced. It's not more stealth in the shadows or anything along those lines. Like it can be if you want it to be, but there's more of a, like, this seems more of like a video game, where Splinter Cell seems more of like a real life simulator. Another thing about like the respect that the two have for each other too. A couple years ago when Sam Fisher arrived in Ghost Recon Badlands, there's a cutscene in there where they're introducing Sam Fisher to the world and stuff, and he's like, oh yeah, there was this other spy, blah, 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 blah. Like he wore a bandana and stuff like that. And like, oh, he's been retired for a really long time now. And like Sam looks at the camera. He's like, I'm the only one left. Like, and he's like sad and worried about it. Like it's one of those, like, if you can find that clip or that video, definitely watch it, because it's one of those things, like the way that Michael Ironside delivers the voice and the facial features of Sam Fisher, like you can see that he's actually like upset.
So Josh, here's the classic question that you coined.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, do you skip, play, or complete Metal Gear Solid 2?
Play.
Ooh.
I just play it. You don't need to go for the whole complete thing. You don't need to worry about grabbing all the dog tags. You don't need to worry about...
Oh, okay, sure. I get you. Okay, yeah. Just complete the mainline narrative.
Yeah, yeah. None of that extra stuff. Don't go into the VR missions. You don't need to read all of the manuscripts and stuff like that are inside the... I mean, you can if you want to, but I think just playing the game itself, just to get through the story, to see how creepy... this all turns out to be, I think playing it is the best way to go. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I was going to say complete, but I kind of did realize what you're implying complete means. Yeah. Like the extra stuff you can unlock is fun if the game really sucks you in. But the experience that we're talking about can be done with just a regular playthrough. So definitely play it. And if you love it enough that you're inspired to complete it, you'll get some extra lore out of it. Yeah. But worth playing, absolutely.
But definitely play Metal Gear Solid 1 more, because that's the better of the two. Or Twin Snakes. I'll accept Twin Snakes as well.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
But until next time, guys, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex Capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening.
And we'll see you in the future.